We're going to get started. I'm going to call the Committee of Public Safety Policy and Oversight to order. We don't yet have a quorum. Today is Thursday, April 15th. Members, I want everyone to understand that all of the bills that are on the agenda today did not meet policy deadline, and so anything that makes it out of here today needs to go to the Rules Committee. These are all issues that need to be fully vetted. Some of them were planned to be offered as amendments. Some have previously made it out of our committee, and some are new issues that we need to fully discuss. There are amendments that did not meet the 24-hour deadline on some of these, but I will likely be offering them up for the committee to consider, because ultimately, if these issues are going to be seen on the House floor, it is always best if we can vet as many of them in committee as possible.
Madam Chair.
Representative Bigham.
Before we start and move to approve the minutes for you, I'm just wondering if you have any news that maybe you heard this morning.
Yes, Representative Bigham, I did pass the bar.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. So I did bring cookies, and so we'll have the staff pass out cookies in a little bit. It is awful early for cookies, but thank you. So with that, Representative Hosh, would you like to go first or would you like to go second? Well, we can have you come up. Okay, Representative Hosh. House File 2939 is Representative Hosh's, and Representative Hosh, again, we don't have a quorum, so I'm not even going to move the bill right now. I just would like you to enlighten us as to your bill. Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House File 2939 and also House File 2827 goes to address one particular issue that has occurred from a business owner in my district who does escorting of oversized loads, who's a licensed protective agent. And there's quite a bit of history to this issue. What has happened most recently is that during escorting loads, using red flashing lights, in which LPAs in statute have been given authorization to use in things such as funeral escorts, the business has been pulled over, and there has been pulled over for using those red lights during escorts. MnDOT, when they issue permits for the escorting of these oversized loads, in the past has always allowed for licensed protective agents to use red lights to escort oversized encroaching loads throughout the state of Minnesota. However, recently, because of the ambiguity or a debate on who can and can't use red flashing lights for oversized loads, MnDOT has also changed their policies for allowing escorting of loads using red lights and no longer allows licensed protective agents. This has been a very significant burden to my particular business owner in the district, in which he's had over 20 employees and is now down to 2 part-time employees because of this impact. And with large loads being more common in our roads throughout the state of Minnesota, especially with wind energy moving forward, this is an option that not only does my constituent need to have to continue operating his business, but also the industry. Anderson Trucking Services, Kircher Transport up in the Iron Range, and many others who are in the industry want to have the option of having a licensed protective agent who has to go through a process of being licensed to be able to escort their encroaching loads throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm not going to talk a whole lot more because those most affected by it will be able to tell their story and the need for this bill, but I greatly appreciate the committee's time and consideration of this bill today.
Thank you, Representative Hosh. We do officially have a quorum, so I will formally call this meeting to order. Please bring your witnesses and go ahead and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Dwight Patterson. Thank you for setting this hearing for our proposed amendments. I would like to thank Representative Larry Hosh for his efforts in moving this forward for us. My wife, Lori, and I own PATS LLC, a protective agent business licensed by the state of Minnesota. The proposed amendments are to allow LPAs to do what the legislature authorized LPAs to do in 1996, escort oversized loads instead of police, and which has not been an issue until 2008 when LPAs have been prohibited from escorting or encroaching oversized loads. In late December 2009, our attorney found a hearing when 1996 amendment was proposed which hearing was January 31st, 1996. That hearing has been transcribed and reads, basically what this does is clarify that private traffic escort businesses can compete for oversized special permit work. In recent years, the department changed this policy, and now most of the oversized permits are done by state patrol. I'm not saying that the patrol shouldn't be doing this work. I want that clearly understood. I'm just saying that the private sector that was doing this work before the policy change should be able to compete for this kind of work. They are specifically trained for the work and were providing the service very effectively before MnDOT change. This was said by Senator Vickerman. The amendment passed without objection and was signed into law. We started our LPA business in 2000, which consisted of providing stationary security guards and escorting funeral processions and oversized loads. In 2000, I spoke with Major Al Smith of the State Patrol regarding the use of flashing red lights when providing the funeral and oversized load escorting services. He told me that I was allowed to use flashing red lights. I also obtained a MnDOT escort policy that defined police escort as a licensed peace officer / licensed protective agent, and that the police escort shall operate according to Minnesota Statute 16920 Subdivision 5 as an authorized emergency vehicle. From 2000 until June of 2007, our company escorted 1,100 oversized loads throughout Minnesota using flashing red lights when the Minnesota permit required a police / LPA escort. There were at least 500 times that the State Patrol observed our company escorting oversized loads while using flashing red lights. And there were at least 50 times where the State Patrol escorted oversized loads with our company, again while we were using flashing red lights. We were stopped a few times by law enforcement, state patrol, or county sheriff regarding the use of red lights. At those times, we would show them the statutes, and if they needed further clarification, to call Major Al Smith of the State Patrol in St. Paul. We never received any tickets. In June 2007, we received citations in Stearns County for being in violation of Minnesota 16964. Driving with prohibited colored lights. I talked with the county attorney and the citations were dismissed on the conclusion that the law is unclear as to whether LPAs were allowed to use red lights. In October and November 2007, we were cited in St. Louis County for being in violation of Minnesota Statute 16964, prohibited colored lights. In April of 2008, these citations went to trial. We did not have an attorney represent us, which I later realized was a mistake. The court ruled against us. It is my understanding from our current attorney that the ruling is not binding on any other case or judge, as any district court in Minnesota, including any judge in St. Louis County, and even the judge that ruled against us, could reach a different conclusion on another case. After this court ruling, MnDOT stopped issuing permits that stated police / LPA escorts. They started issuing permits that state only police peace officer and verbally told the trucking companies that if Minnesota permit states peace officer, that they must use a law enforcement officer rather than an LPA. As a result of this, trucking companies that had already booked our LPA services started calling and canceling these services because they were told by MnDOT that if a permit stated peace officer, they could not use us. I contacted MnDOT to find out what was going on. I was told that it is necessary for public safety to use flashing red lights when escorting encroaching oversized loads. Although in a letter we had received on October 24, 2007 from Major Kent O'Grady, of the State Patrol, he states that it is their position that it is not necessary to use red lights when escorting oversized loads, that flashing amber lights and manual traffic control is sufficient to ensure the safety of overdimensional loads and the adjacent traffic. So we are receiving conflicting positions from MnDOT and the State Patrol. In January 2008, we were issued two citations in Rock County for being in violation of Minnesota Statute 16964, prohibited color lights again. We hired an attorney to represent us. The citations were dismissed. In April 2009, we were issued citations in Pipestone County for being in violation of Minnesota Statute 16964, prohibited color lights. We hired an attorney to represent us. The citations were dismissed. There is no doubt in our mind that had we hired an attorney for the St. Louis County case, the case would have either been dismissed as in Stearns County, Rock County, and Pipestone County, or the court would have ruled in our favor given the facts and the law and the attorney's ability to present the case and legal arguments. The legislature passed Minnesota Statute 326.338, Subdivision 4, in 1996, authorizing LPAs to be used instead of police officers for escorting oversized loads when a special permit is required, which included the right to control traffic. The legislature's desire to allow LPAs to be used instead of police officers is not being implemented by MnDOT because they are not allowing LPAs to escort encroaching oversized loads, and it's not being implemented by law enforcement because they are now taking the position that LPAs cannot use red lights when escorting oversized loads. Questions that I have are, if law enforcement opposes LPAs using red lights to escort oversized loads, then why did law enforcement not issue any tickets to my company from 2000 to 2007 when we were using red lights? Does the state patrol continue to hold the position that flashing amber lights are sufficient for public safety purposes when escorting encroaching oversized loads? Apparently, MnDOT does not think amber lights are sufficient. And is escorting oversized loads a core function of the State Patrol? Is escorting oversized loads the best use of the State Patrol? The State Patrol itself has said that not. This was stated last year when there was a meeting in Senator Fischbach's office. Present at this meeting were two representatives from the State Patrol, representatives from four LPA companies, Senator Fischbach, Senator's assistant. During this meeting, both Michelle Tuckner and Ken Urquhart from the State Patrol stated that they did not want to be in the business of escorting oversized loads. They had better use of their time. Doesn't MnDOT have to implement the legislature's will that LPAs can be used in place of police when a special permit is required? We understand the State Patrol in particular and law enforcement in general are an extremely powerful and influential as citizens running this small business. We don't have the resources, don't have the access and the power that law enforcement has, or for that matter, MnDOT. Maybe we are naive, but we hold to the belief that our proposed amendment will be voted on by the merits of by the legislature, and the best position will prevail, which is to pass the amendments. We have tried everything we could do short of filing a lawsuit to resolve the situation by contacting MnDOT, the State Patrol, the Attorney General, the Governor, and others. We have written letters to those involved seeking justice from the government agencies. Unfortunately, to date, our efforts have been to no avail. Again, we simply want to do what legislature has authorized us to do when we first started our business. If House File 2939 is passed, it will make it clear to MnDOT when they issue permits for encroaching oversized loads that the trucking companies are allowed to use LPAs if they so desire. And it will make clear to the State Patrol that LPAs may use flashing red lights when escorting encroaching oversized loads, and that the 1986 amendment to Minnesota Statute 326.338 authorized. It will allow us to build our business back to the employees that have been laid off to work and possibly hire more employees. I'd like to turn it over to my wife Lori now. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members, for your time.
Thank you. Please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Lori Patterson. I also want to thank you for hearing our proposed amendments, and I would like to thank Representative Larry Hosh for his efforts in trying to move this forward. In late 2006, early 2007, there was the start of a huge increase in the number of wind tower components being transported throughout the state. This was due to wind tower components either being shipped into the Port of Duluth or being shipped out from the Port of Duluth. These tower components needed to be moved throughout Minnesota. Because of the size of these wind tower components, and in order to protect the safety of the load and the general public, the demand for escorting these loads also had a huge increase. As a result, our company was receiving a large increase in the number of telephone calls from trucking companies seeking our LPA service to escort their encroaching oversized loads. So that's when our company decided to focus more on the oversized load escorting services for these trucking companies, and we increased the number of our vehicles and hired more employees. We have spent many, many, many hours building our business. We invested approximately $500,000 to expand our business. We increased our vehicles from 7 to 14 vehicles and hired 10 additional employees. In 2007, our LPA services increased from 43 loads in 2006 to 398 loads in 2007. After MnDOT stopped issuing permits that stated police/LPA, our LPA business was devastated. Instead of our business going up in 2008 and 2009, it decreased approximately 45% by the end of 2009. And we also had to reduce our workforce from 10 full-time employees and 7 part-time down to 0 full-time employees and 12 part-time. As of today, our LPA business has suffered a further decrease of approximately 55% compared to our 2009 income at the same time. And we now only have 2 part-time employees. We have found that we are now fast approaching having to file bankruptcy because we invested so much in our business based on information given to us by various state agencies. We have incurred debt, and now we do not have the income to pay this debt. As Dwight has stated, we have done everything we could, short of filing a lawsuit, to resolve this situation. Can you tell me, is there anyone in this room that would not do the same thing that we are doing in order to try and resolve this situation if their income was reduced by 50% or they were faced with having to file bankruptcy? We operated our business from 2000 to mid-2007 without any significant issues with law enforcement. Now we understand that law enforcement is taking the following positions with regards to the use of flashing red lights when escorting oversized or encroaching oversized loads. I do believe that you did receive a handout that will give you the law enforcement's position. I will briefly just touch on them. Law enforcement feels that red lights must be used exclusively for emergency purposes. Red lights must be preserved exclusively for law enforcement purposes. The use of red lights guarantees that the public continues to respect flashing red lights as an emergency requiring their immediate attention, and that red lights used by LPAs will confuse the public. These four positions that we've stated have been told to us in letters from Senator Fischbach and Major Kent O'Grady of the State Patrol. Our response to the law enforcement positions would be: the legislature authorized LPAs to be used in place of police for escorting oversized loads. MnDOT requires red lights. Thus, LPAs must be able to use red lights if they're going to be used in place of police. Red lights are not exclusively used for emergency purposes. Red lights are allowed on vehicles owned by funeral homes. They're used on school buses and tow trucks and towing vehicles. Red lights were used by LPAs from 1996 through 2008 when escorting oversized loads. Red lights are still being used by LPAs in the metro area. The MnDOT escort policy, dated 2003, defines a police escort as a licensed peace officer or a licensed protective agent, and that the police escort shall operate in the following manner as per Minnesota Statute 169, Subdivision 5, for an authorized emergency vehicle. Red lights are used by the state patrol when they are escorting oversized loads. We also have asked for evidence or proof that the public was confused when LPAs were using red lights. As of today, we have not yet received any such evidence or proof. As it stands now, the state patrol, or law enforcement in general, has a monopoly on the business of escorting encroaching oversized loads. Is this the best interest of Minnesota? Is it really in the best interest of Minnesota? The passage of the bill will benefit the state of Minnesota, it will benefit the trucking companies, and it will benefit the LPA companies. And I've also included the benefits in your handout. House File 2939 will clearly implement the legislature's mandate as set forth in Minnesota Statute 326.338 by confirming that LPAs can use flashing red lights when escorting encroaching oversized loads, and thus allow us to operate our business in the same manner that we did from 2000 until 2008, and allow us to hire employees back and to reinvest in our LPA business. My husband and I at this time would be happy to answer any questions that you have for us. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members.
Questions for members. Representative Cornish.
I'm going to try to answer a lot of your questions that you brought up. I'm the Chief of Police on Lake Crystal, and my son and my son-in-law are both state troopers, and there wasn't enough time to bring you these stories, but there are some scary stories out there about escort vehicles, about what they do, and about situations they've come across where they block traffic in the wrong way without the proper amount of training. Unfortunately, sometimes the legislature makes conflicting laws and they have to be interpreted. I agree with you that this one could stand some reinterpretation, but I would go the other way and specifically prohibit the escort vehicles. And the reason for that is just my background in seeing these things come down the road. And like you say, there's increased traffic all the time, and it's getting more dangerous out there instead of less with the I-beams coming down the road and the wind towers. The police have a lot of training in this, and even though you have some training with yours, they've always done this, and there are scary stories out there, and the reason you're not getting a lot of them is because the public doesn't usually say much. But I know even myself, when I'm going down the road nowadays, especially with the new move over for the red lights in the other lane, you see red lights up ahead, you automatically hit your brakes, and the patrol and other law enforcement people can tell you the more red lights you see, that they actually cause accidents themselves. Cops, unfortunately, we cause accidents. We're on the side of the road, somebody sees a red light, somebody gets excited to hit the brakes, somebody rear ends them. It's an unfortunate part of the business that we create. I've been scribbling notes here, but I think that the point you make about the tickets being dismissed isn't based on your merit and the great job you're doing, even though you do a great job in instances. It's because of the ambiguity of the law. It wasn't because they think that they supported your position. It's just when a prosecutor or a judge, when they make a decision to prosecute, or if the judge makes a decision to dismiss, if there's an ambiguity in the law, they're going to err to your side. That doesn't mean that you're right. That just means the law needs to be looked at again. And the reason that cops aren't writing tickets is simple. When I worked for the DNR or I worked for any organization, three or four of them in the past, if there is an ambiguity in the law, we expect management or the legislature to take care of it. Why write a ticket if you know it's going to be dismissed or if you know the judge is going to throw it out? So while you have a case for ambiguity in the law, it's really not a case to to bolster your case, in other words, to make your case stronger, to allow you to have the red lights, I would think it would go the other way. Now, I understand that you have a meeting possibly with the governor coming up, and I'm personally am together with law enforcement in opposing your position. And unfortunately, we can't manage the legislature for business. I mean, we do certain times with TIF districts and this and that and incentives, but when business comes up against personal safety and protection on the road, we have to give the balance has to be go towards public safety and protection of the public rather than business. I'm sorry about what's happened to your business. I'm sure it is really discouraging to have your business cut down, but the MnDOT, I don't think, just dreamed up one day we're sitting at their desk and say, let's crack down on these darn escort vehicles. There is a reason for it, and the reason for it is the problems that are encountered on the road. And so while I sympathize with your point and your loss of business, there's reasons for these actions, and there's reasons for the court cases being dropped and the prosecutors not prosecuting. It's because the law basically needs to be looked at again. You might have a case for bringing this up in another session, but I think it should go the other way. I think that red lights, in fact, I've told this community before that we have to crack down on red lights. We've got everybody wanting to be, and not accusing you of this, but in law enforcement. We've got vehicles stopping people in parking lots and on the street. We got securities overstepping their boundaries and stopping people where they shouldn't. And there's a lot of this going on. I want to redefine the whole term public safety and get the red lights off, except licensed peace officers who know what they're doing and using them, and let other people use blue lights, flashing lights, whatever they want, arrow sticks. But so that's my explanation to you in trying to answer your questions, is you've got a point, there's ambiguity here, but I think it needs to go the other way and tighten it up rather than loosen it up. So
questions for members or Representative Hush.
Madam Chair, I believe there's one more testifier. That
Representative Hosh, is he going to be brief? Because we do have to give the other side, and we have two more bills on the agenda as well.
They're promising me they're going to be brief.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and go ahead.
My name's Thomas Fitzhenry, and I thank the chair and the committee for hearing me. Just to state briefly, I may disagree in parts with Mr. Cornish. I am the owner of Metro Motorcycle Escort, been a peace officer for over 30 years. For 30 years, I did funerals. And what I got into the business, I was called by a company that couldn't get the state patrol to do a move event because they had other duties. And that's how I got into the business. We were called by other companies that couldn't get the state patrol. Part of the problem was state patrol was busy doing VIP details. Police departments won't do it because they can't change jurisdictions, so the minute that load leaves their jurisdiction, they can't do that move. And sheriff's office, the minute they leave their county, they can't do the move. So I was brought into it basically as that, and they knew I was a law enforcement officer, so they had me start these. During the first part of it, I asked the state, what do I need for equipment? I talked to the private detective board at that time, who authorizes us to do the loads, and they said, check with the state patrol. At the time I checked with the state patrol, red lights were authorized for LPAs doing moves, which meant oversized loads that encroached. I was doing funeral businesses at the time, and we were using motorcycles. I started motorcycles. Believe me, they don't work very well for doing oversized loads. You get blown off the motorcycle. So we went to vehicles. I made sure it was okay with vehicles. I had no problem with it. I wasn't aware there was a problem until Dwight and them were issued a citation. And then I checked on it, and we had meetings with the state patrol to find out if we could relieve this situation. We did go through kind of a committee hearing, and hopefully we thought we were going to resolve it then. That did not get resolved, and that's why we're back at you this year to find out if we can resolve the red light issue. As far as safety, I challenge anybody to show that where we had an accident where an LPA was actually escorting a load or where we're doing a funeral. When they don't have an LPA or somebody trained, that's when the accidents happen. Are we trained? Yes. The people in my company, either police officers or former police officers, they are trained by us for emergency vehicle driving. They're trained by us for how to do the loads, how to move the loads safely. And in fact, I have assisted other agencies, including police agencies, on how to do escorts. So as far as training, an LPA may be better trained than your average officer. And as a police officer, I can swear, nowhere in my formal training did I learn how to escort a funeral or an oversized load.
Thank you.
All I have to say.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Please come to the table, state your name for the record. Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just had a quick question. Do you know how many LPAs there are in the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Kelly, 75.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ken Urquhart. I'm the commander of the Commercial Vehicle Enforcement Section for the Minnesota State Patrol. I'm here today to speak with you about the issue of red lights and licensed protective agents, and it's been conveyed to me by the other law enforcement associations and groups that the entire law enforcement community opposes this legislation. I can tell you that for the past 18 months, along with the folks that have testified before me, that we've served on a steering committee to look at the training and certification of wide load escort, not only the vehicles, but the people that operate those vehicles. And one of the issues that brought the steering committee together was the service that was being provided to the folks that actually make those wide moves, those trucking firms that haul that equipment. And after I heard some of the comments from the previous testifiers, I made a phone call to our St. Cloud Patrol District. Our troopers in the St. Cloud District, as an example, have not conducted a windmill escort since the summer of 2008. So I believe what has happened here is based on possibly the economy, that a lot of these moves have dropped off. And the other thing I'd like to make clear for the committee, and I don't think anyone here is here from MnDOT today, but MnDOT sets the policy and the procedures on those escort permits, the permits that are actually issued to the folks that make those moves. And in the permit, it establishes the guidelines for what types of escorts and the other criteria that need to be followed when those moves are made. And it's up to the people that make that move, and I mean the trucking firms, who they want to hire. Some of them religiously come to us, regardless, and some of them don't. And we're not out there in the business of making escorts. But if they do come to us and they want us to do it, we do that. So saying that, if you have any questions from the committee, I'd be glad to answer those.
Questions from members? Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you could comment, it seems like quite a statistic that the testifier just previously said that there was actually no accidents in that time period or within his company. Do you know of accidents were at the fault of an LPA escorted project?
Commander Kenner.
Madam Chair, Representative, my office is in Mendota Heights, and it's right near that large cemetery on Lexington Avenue. And the LPAs come down that Highway 110 to Lexington quite frequently to take funeral escorts to that cemetery. I have personally witnessed crashes involving their moves at that location. I personally stopped them for poor driving. I've had other employees in my district stop those folks because of their driving conduct. So we truly have, from my personal perspective that I've seen, I truly have a concern about how they operate. And the steering committee I spoke about, some of those folks, some of the questions they had was, especially the trucking firms, their concern was, if we get placed out of service because there's a problem with the LPA or our driver gets cited, we want the LPA held accountable if they're not complying with the permit requirements. So we've had these long discussions. And there is legislation proceeding through this body to establish training and certification for all folks that do escorts, including law enforcement officers. So that process is taking place as we speak.
Is that in the Transportation Committee? Because that's not something we've seen yet this session.
Madam Chair, yesterday the Senate file passed the Senate Finance and went on to the floor. As far as on the House side, I'm not absolutely sure where it is on the House side.
Okay. We'll check into that. Further questions from members? Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is just a follow-up on the commander, and this goes to the previous testifiers. Can you tell me the number of loads that have taken place in 2008 and 2009 compared to the your figure about 378 in 2007?
Commander Kenner.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that information right at this moment.
Right. I was directing this to the Pattersons, if they might speak. Thank you.
We'll let them come back up in just 1 second. Is there anybody else who wanted to testify for or against this bill? I just want to make sure everybody gets the opportunity. Thank you, Commander.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members.
Representative Hosh, if you want to have your testifier come back, if they can answer the question, that would be great.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. As I say, my name is Dwight Patterson. I want to point out that, yes, there is legislation, but there, in the state of Minnesota, there are two types of escorting. There is law enforcement escorting, which includes the LPAs and a post-certified law enforcement officer. And then you have your civilian escorting, which I, myself, and Captain Ken Urquhart, and Tom Fitzhenry, we are also members of that steering committee that the State Patrol spoke of. And the LPA issue and red lights is not in that steering committee. As the number of escorts that were oversized loads escorts, that is handled by MnDOT. And one time they had told us how many oversized loads, and I cannot remember that number, but it is available through MnDOT permit section.
Representative Rosenthal.
So what the commander said about the economy playing a large part in the, your decline in business could actually be true. And I'm sorry about the decline in business. It's awful. But you don't know the number on that.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Our business is statewide. We don't just operate in the St. Cloud area. We operate, right now we are operating in the Pipestone area, which is Suzalon blade manufacturer, and we are also working up in Grand Forks, East Grand Forks area with blade manufacturers. We also work in Fargo with the tube manufacturers, and a lot of it comes out of Duluth there at the port, and a lot of it goes out of the port of Duluth. So we are statewide. We're just not confined to Representative Larry Hosh's district. We are all over. So.
Representative Szymanski, then Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question, I guess, goes to the LPAs. And if a manufacturer who routinely produces an oversized load, can they use their own staff if they're qualified to escort an oversized load without hiring an outside firm?
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative. That is up to MnDOT on the permit, whether they put civilian escorts, or if the load requires a law enforcement, then the permit will dictate whether they can use their own or if they have to hire law enforcement or an LPA service.
Representative Coles.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Hosh, I was about 3-4 minutes late for the hearing, and so I apologize if you covered this when you introduced the bill, but for either you or your witness, if I'm going to move an oversized load in the state of Minnesota, a couple questions here. If I'm going to move an oversized load in the state of Minnesota, do I need to get a permit to do that?
Representative Hosh.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, if it's an encroaching load, so if it's encroaching into an alternate or another lane of traffic, then you need a permit, from my understanding.
Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, and if the witness can correct Representative Hosh, if that's not correct, the second question then is, if you get a permit to move an encroaching oversized load, do you need to have an escort? Are you required to have an escort as part of that permit?
Representative Hosh.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, with MnDOT permitting, yes, you would be required to have an escort.
All right. Coles. And then, Madam Chair, it does, and maybe we're getting here now to the point of the bill, does that escort have to utilize flashing lights of a certain color in order to escort that oversized load?
Representative Hosh.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, as of 2008, the permits that MnDOT is requires red lights to be used. Prior to 2008, and I've got two different sample permits here, it said that it could be a peace officer or an LPA. After 2008, it's only a police officer.
I believe the commander also wants to answer that portion of the
That
question.
Would be really helpful.
Commander
Madam
Kenner,
Chair.
If you could. Why don't we pull up a chair and you can sit next to him. Commander, please have a seat.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To clarify the issue for the committee, MnDOT issues permits for wide loads that exceed the legal width, which is basically 8.5 feet. Anytime you go wider than the statutory limit, you need a permit. Now, some of those permitted loads require escorts. Encroaching loads, MnDOT has determined that if the load encroaches on oncoming traffic, they want peace officers to escort that load. So any load that requires escorts, aside from the encroaching load, Mr. Patterson's can be used to do that. His business can be used to do that. So there's a number of different types of loads that require escorts. Only certain ones require law enforcement to do them.
Commander, I wish you would have corrected me about your name. I've been calling you Kenner, and it's Ken Urquhart. My handwriting was running together, so I apologize for addressing you by the improper name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's common spelling.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cole.
Madam Chair, Commander, thank you. That's helpful. I think I understand now what the issue is. So basically, Representative Hosh, what you're trying to do is you're trying to give your constituent and his business the opportunity to escort encroaching loads, right? I mean, that's the nub of this?
Representative Hosh.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, yes. If you look at the subdivision dealing with the protective agent on 2939, and you look on the last lines on page 2, it says a person covered by this subdivision may perform traffic control duties in place of a police officer when a special permit is required. So up until 2008, that special permit allowed this protective agent to be in place of a peace officer, just as it says in statute today. Once 2008 happened, that permit, however, changed, and the rules changed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Coles.
Commander, is the issue from the eyes of the State Patrol that the LPAs want to use red lights, or is it that you guys, the State Patrol, believes that it is the only one sufficiently trained and qualified to escort these encroaching loads? Is it the lights, or is it the training, or what is it? Because we knew green lights, and I'd be fine with that. But help me understand that issue.
Commander.
Madam Chair, Representative, actually, it's several of those things. First of all, of course, we are concerned because any time that you, as Representative Cornish talked about, you start adding more and more different types of vehicles or operations or movement on the highway that are going to be using red lights, the public's going to have to recognize that. And we have a great deal of difficulty, as you well know, with the public recognizing the emergency vehicles that we have today. And so the other question that you had was about the escorting the encroaching loads. That's what's really driving this whole training certification process, is that the industry that makes those moves wanted some autonomy to do some of their own escorting under limitations. They also want to make sure that the people they're hiring, whether it's law enforcement or the LPAs, are properly trained and have reached a certain certification level so they can be rest assured that those people are trained. Because right now there is no training requirement for anyone that does escorts in this state, including law enforcement.
Representative Paymar, the final question.
Well, just a quick question, Madam Chair. Commander, how much do you charge? I mean, do you charge enough? Do you charge, and is it enough to cover the cost of your providing law enforcement escort service?
Commander.
Madam Chair, Representative, the rate that we use to charge for an escort is by the hour, and we have a billing rate that includes the trooper and the vehicle the trooper operates. And I don't have that exact amount. But that's how we bill that. And the people that hire us, they frequently. They understand what that rate is, and they make that decision. We don't require them to use us. They could use another law enforcement agency.
Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, I just want to make sure that the state is getting fully reimbursed for a private activity that you're providing.
Yes.
And you are saying you are.
Yes, we are.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Peterson.
I'd like to do a little bit more defining. In the state of Minnesota...
If I could we're going to wrap this up real quickly because we have two more bills on the agenda, so go ahead and...
In the state of Minnesota, like he says, when the size oversized load gets to a certain distinction or size, MnDOT requires certain types of escorts. Either it be law enforcement or civilian escorts. Right now, in the state of Minnesota, Madam Chair, you can go out, put lights on your car and signs on, and escort. In the state of Minnesota, a licensed peace officer has to go through post-training. In the state of Minnesota, an LPA has to go through an FBI, BCA background check, 12 hours of pre-assignment. They must have a commercial auto insurance. They must have commercial liability insurance. They must have equipment to perform that. But at this point in time, civilian escorts can do whatever they want. LPA and law enforcement, we go by guidelines and statutes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the committee's time. Just try to put yourself in this position where our statute specifically says that protective agents can take the place of a peace officer when it comes to traffic control duties. We need clarification. And whether it's green lights or amber lights or red lights or the permitting simply allowing a protective agent to do the escort, we need clarification. I'm hopeful that some future meetings will be able to achieve that. Do appreciate your time and the time on this issue of getting it forward and having a discussion on it.
Members, it's my understanding that the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Transportation and the Governor's Office is meeting tomorrow. Is that correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
And so at this point, I'm going to lay this bill over based on that new information. I'm laying over both House File 2939 and House File 2827.
Madam Chair.
Who is talking? Oh, Representative Holman. Sorry.
That's all right. There's about four or five people in this room that at least have to make an appearance for an ag policy bill committee, so maybe we should just all leave beforehand because Erdahl, Draskowski, Ron, Lori, and I are all involved in that, so we could just wander over there quick and be back.
That's fine. Those that need to check in, that's fine. The next item up.
That'll put you on stop probably for a second.
That's okay. Okay. Representative Draskowski, you're going to be next. No, go ahead. Representative Boland, we're not going to be taking any votes or doing anything. We're just going to lay out kind of how we ended up back here. So go ahead and check in. Members, I just kind of want to highlight how we ended up with Representative Ruskowski's bill back in our committee. We can all thank Representative Paymar for that. I'm teasing Representative Paymar. Members, Representative Ruskowski's child pornography bill, and we were not certain if it was going to cost any money, so it ended up getting sent to finance. It does not cost any money, so it didn't need to go there. However, there was some confusion, and finance spent about an hour talking about the policy on this bill, and so they sent it back to us. And in addition to what is in Representative Draskowski's bill, they talked about an issue that is not necessarily in Representative Draskowski's bill, and that is sexting, which is a new phenomenon that we've been seeing in Minnesota over the last few years. So what I'd like to have Representative Draskowski do is talk about what he'd like, and then we'll also talk about what finance spent a large amount of time talking about, and then this body will make the decision as to whether we want to let this bill go or whether we want to let the amendment go on, and it will have to go to rules because it, of course, has not met deadline, or whether we believe this issue is larger than the amount of time we have and if we want to study it during the interim. So with that, Representative Gruskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, I'd like to begin by just outlining that when this bill did go to Finance Committee, one of the reasons, and Madam Chair, I'd like to take responsibility for a large part of the fact that the bill is back here. I did introduce an amendment to then the Senate file that would have placed many of the elements that were in the House file when it came through this committee onto the Senate file so we could merge the two bills together. In hindsight, Madam Chair, that was a mistake, and but we are back here, and there was value actually in the discussion, I think, Representative Paymar and others that that were there, and really opened up the discussion about the whole sexting issue. If you'll remember from the discussion earlier, this bill originated out of a loophole that was discovered in the statute in a case where we had the state of Minnesota versus Gary Lee Johnson back in, and that was a Court of Appeals decision of a case from Morehead County back in December that came forward that threw really some uncertainty on the law, or as certainly the loophole, I guess, if you will, that exists today. And I have with me Tom Gort, who is with the Winona County Attorney's Office, and Travis Volkman, who is with the Goodview Police Department. They have been involved in this whole issue of child pornography as it relates to adults, and I think that's one thing for us to keep keep clear here, and I think Mr. Gordon and Mr. Volkman are able to maybe bring a little more clarity to the issues and where the whole sexting thing and the issue that we're really about with the bill do and do not, actually maybe more so, do not link directly to each other, but certainly given that, I am interested in whatever we do as a committee and decide here today to find a way at some point to bring some resolution and some clarity to the whole sexting issue as well. And as a matter of fact, members, the two amendments, the DE1 amendment and the A3 amendment, after discussion with Mr. Gort and Mr. Volkman this morning, are not necessary, and the hope is that we could go forward with the Senate file the way it is, certainly have discussion about the sexting issue to the extent you would like to have it, and I do have, and with help from Mr. Diebel, I guess it's kind of a stab at a sexting, a piece of sexting potential statute here, but in discussion with Mr. Diebel and Mr. Gort, just preliminary discussions, we're not sure it's really ready for prime time, and it really, in our opinion, is going to require further discussion, and I am certainly committed, should I be sent back here next year, to work on this at length to make sure we get something, if that's the will of the committee. So,
okay, so members, so in all the paper that you have, the one that says SF-2945 is the one that you should be working off of. This is the Senate's language, and you're prepared to talk about what the Senate language does, and this is what you'd like to have pass out of the committee unamended. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair. If you wouldn't mind, Madam Chair, I'd ask Mr. Gort to talk about the bill.
Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Gort, Assistant Winona County Attorney. When we first took a shot at coming up with some language to fix the loophole that the Court of Appeals identified in that Johnson case, one way of going at that was with some language that's included in the draft D1 amendment. The language that was passed in the Senate version was another way of trying to get at closing that same loophole. Given that the Senate version has passed and that the proposed D1 amendment would essentially overlap and be another way of trying to get at the same problem, it really is unnecessary at this point. I was the one who came up with those proposed definitions, and I'm certainly comfortable that the Senate version would adequately address the Johnson issue and limit the amendment of the statute to fixing that loophole.
Can you clarify, did this language pass the entire Senate or just a committee out of the Senate, or what's the status?
Madam Chair, my understanding is it passed on the floor 67-0.
That's okay. Correct.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. Further, I do understand that the sexting issue was raised in the Finance Committee. I have had some discussions with Representative Graskowski and shared my thoughts with Mr. Dybul about the draft. We're dealing with this issue, the sexting issue. We've had some incidents reported to us, and perhaps Officer Volkman, who deals with them more on the front line, can address that more directly. But we're not prosecuting children who are sexting right now under the child pornography statute. We're frankly not really prosecuting that typical garden variety sexting incident at all.
Somebody's phone? Please continue.
Thank you. The proposed amendment that's contained in the Senate version would fix the loophole identified in the Johnson case, would make it more difficult for people who are engaging in child pornography to get away with it, and would not increase at all the risk that teenagers would be caught up in the child pornography statutes because they're engaging in otherwise innocuous behavior that is not currently being prosecuted under child pornography. This would not make it more likely that they would be. It simply would fix that loophole.
Representative Paymar.
Well, I'll wait until he's done.
Okay, go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Representative Draskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could add just two things. First of all, there was a fiscal note done on the bill. It came out at zero, and that was prior to actually the Senate language being adopted. If you look at the bill at 2.1 and 2.2, when the bill came through committee last time, Representative Coles raised what I thought was a very pertinent question about what then appeared to be maybe some language that was too broad. At 2.1, the original language that came through in the House file said, or intended, and then it skipped to later on 2.2, to arouse a sexual desire of any person. The qualifying language, by a person who commits an act prohibited by this section or section 6.17.247, was added to the Senate file, and that's the narrowing language I believe that Representative Coles raised and that we were looking for. And so we're very happy with that language the way it appears in the Senate file and believe that it accomplishes what we need to accomplish.
Representative Paymar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a comment maybe, and Representative Draskowski, I appreciate your framing your bill the way you have and your willingness to try to work on it. And I know when we say, well, the Senate passed it unanimously, that must mean that it's got to be a good bill then. And maybe it is. But I think that makes a good argument for why we have two bodies and why this is important, because sometimes something can surface that allows another body to take a deeper look. And we did have an interesting discussion in finance, and I didn't bring it up. I just happened to be the only public safety member, I think, on the finance committee, and was sort of asked why we didn't vet this more thoroughly, I guess, in our committee, which I didn't really have a good answer for. But having said that, I guess I just want to say that some of the discussion that came up, and Representative Slawik really brought about most of the debate about the sexting issue, and what she was saying, and I think is true, is you do have a lot of kids that are doing this, and foolishly, I might add, but they're doing it, and I don't know in what numbers they're doing it, and that's why, in some ways, Representative Draskowski, I would hope that we would not move forward with this, but rather, you know, bring more people that have more knowledge about this. The prosecutors, is it Mr. Gort?
Yes.
You know, brought up that he's seeing more of this happening in his office, but he's not prosecuting these cases. Well, that's fine to say that. On the other hand, I know in other states, kids have been prosecuted under these very statutes for sexting and are then charged with felony pornography, which, you know, can ruin your life. I mean, so I don't know if I don't, my sense is that this new language doesn't, is, you know, needs some more work. That's what I'm concerned about, is that we, you know, in a matter, if we, because of this court case, which I appreciate your attempt to try to resolve the problem here of a true child pornographer, on the other hand, are we going to pass a bill then that has this whole web out there that bring in a lot of kids who do stupid things, and Mr. Gort's office may choose not to prosecute, but other prosecutors may choose to prosecute to send a message to other kids. I don't, you know, it becomes the law then. And that's what my concern is. And I wished I knew more about it. I frankly don't. My kids are grown, and they, you know, this stuff was not available, or computers and all this stuff was not around. So I don't know how significant a problem it is. But I think we should be cautious when we pass a bill such as this.
I have two further questions, Representative Jackson and Representative Mullery. Representative Jackson.
Interestingly, just last Friday, I was at a meeting about the sexual exploitation of children, and Patty Wetterling gave us a presentation, including some statistics that really shocked me. And one was that while the vast majority of child pornography is still produced, sadly, by parents, relatives, and friends of the family, the number of self-produced or the amount of self-produced pornography had doubled in recent years, and that she had the results of a survey of girls ages 13 to 19, and 22%, nearly one in four, admitted to having taken a nude or semi-nude image of themselves and sent it. I think that's huge. We should have alarm bells going off, and we should be mindful of everything that we do. And so there are a few numbers for you.
Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess, is it Mr. Gort?
Gort,
sorry. I guess I'm very concerned about where can this, whatever you're going to end up proposing this morning as language, can it in any way get into prosecution in any way of minors for sexting? Because I was at National Conference of State Legislatures last summer, and one of their main issues on the criminal matters was this issue and how it's really gotten really bad in some states. People are getting onto the sex registry for life because of stupid things, and all the experts on sexual violence that were at the National Conference State Legislature said we should not be doing this prosecution of people for sexting, and when they're minors. And it is, as Representative Jackson said, huge that what's going on, and states are now going the opposite way. They're exempting it from language if they have broad language. So I want to make sure that we're not in any way getting into that. My second question, and I want you to answer these questions, is 1.9, I guess. How do you determine that? Doesn't that depend on the person? Some people have certain, I mean, some people get excited by seeing a foot. So I don't know what that is. And line 1.23, isn't there a lot of just the regular magazines that have something like a thong bikini in that would meet that? So I'm those three questions.
Mr. Yoke, first say hi to your boss for me when you get back. He's an old professor of mine. And then proceed to...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Answer the question.
I believe the members looking at the D1 amendment, which my understanding is not being moved, looking at the A2 amendment, that language is not being offered, is my understanding.
And the other one, Madam Chair.
Representative Mullery.
And then, so that isn't going to be offered, and DE1 wouldn't get into bringing any more under sexting then. Is that correct?
Correct, Madam Chair.
Okay.
The child pornography statute is already in existence. A child who is sexting, and if that image contains sexual conduct in the sense of sexual intercourse, oral sex, masturbation, this change doesn't affect that exposure of that child to be prosecuted under the child pornography statute. Mm-hmm. All this amendment does is narrows the physical contact provision of the sexual conduct definition. So if the only way that the image is identified as child pornography is because there's physical contact with the certain defined areas, where before the Johnson case, we believe we could prosecute that based on some showing that there was some intent for sexual gratification there, we need to now show that that physical contact is intended to sexually stimulate not the person in the picture, not the child who's having contact with their own body, but by somebody else who may be viewing that. So to the extent that there's a concern about teenagers being prosecuted under child pornography statutes for sending pictures of themselves to a boyfriend or girlfriend, this amendment doesn't increase that risk. It doesn't decrease that risk at all. If they're sending pictures of themselves engaging in sexual conduct, they could be prosecuted potentially under the child pornography statute as it stands now. What this amendment would do is make it less likely for a child pornographer to escape punishment, as Johnson did, because of the loophole that was identified by the Court of Appeals. And that's all this does. It doesn't make it more likely or less likely that a child could be caught up in that child pornography statute. I do agree that the sexting legislation is something that should be addressed, but really it's not, this bill doesn't impact that need to address it one way or another.
I've got Representative Lesh and Representative Paymer and Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, that's just the first of the three questions that I asked.
Representative Mullery?
I believe the other two questions were related to the amendment, which is not being...
Oh, DE1 is not offered either?
Well, bill that we're working off is the Senate language.
Okay.
All right. Representative Lesh and then Representative Paymer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gort, just so I understand this, does it exist anywhere else in the existing child pornography statute where the state must prove that the conduct shown in the pornography could have the tendency to arouse any person?
Mr. Gorton.
Not in the child pornography statute, but in the solicitation statute, there is. The statute that criminalizes trying to use a computer to solicit a child to engage in sexual conduct or sexual activity, or transmitting images to a child to try to arouse the child. That language, to arouse the sexual desire of any person, does exist in that section. I believe it's 609352.
Okay.
Representative Lash.
Mr. Gort, then, in what situation, here's my basic gist of my question. I'm trying to think, because I've not prosecuted one of these, how the jury instruction would look, because that's the pivotal question of when a jury sees it, what language do they say they have to adhere to and which language don't they? So would it say the defendant intended that the photo on his cell phone arouse his own sexual desire or the sexual desire of any person? Has that kind of jig been used under the solicitation statute in prosecutions in the past?
Mr. Gort.
I
D1.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I believe the jury instruction would read similar to the statutory language, to arouse the sexual desire of any person. I don't believe it would specify the defendant or any other person. The jury instructions do tend to track as much as they can with the statutory language so that there's not some misinterpretation or somebody convicted based on something other than what the statute says.
Representative Lesh?
Thank you. Just so I, because I'm not sure I'm following you here, just so I can clarify, of course the defendant would be in the parameters of any person, so depending on who won the jig argument before the judge on that point. It's my understanding that your answer was yes on that, that this, the basic gist of this jig has been used?
Mr. Gort.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, with respect to the solicitation statute, a jig along the lines of this language has been used, and I would expect that would be used under prosecutions for, again, this very limited category of child pornography, ones that are only child pornography because of the physical contact with certain parts of the body. This additional language doesn't apply to the obvious images of child pornography, the ones that include intercourse and so forth. This is only the catch-all provision dealing with physical contact.
Okay, and by the way, I know you've got to get on to other questions too, Madam Chair, but this is my question. I understand you're trying to say, no, this is a very narrow area, but of course you're saying, well, we're not talking about kids sexting here, we're talking about making sure that a pornographer doesn't escape through a loophole. Well, the question that some of the members on this committee have, I think, is at what point does the kid sexting become or pornographer? And that's the question that we're forced to decide here, because that's going to be the question on the table of a prosecutor at some point based on what they do, even when it's looking at sexual contact with respect to a certain part of the body. So that's why I wanted to know examples of when I go into court and have to prove that this specific photo on this cell phone with respect to sexual contact with a certain part of the body could be arousing to someone somewhere in the world at some point. And how do you prove that, and what kind of evidence has been offered in the past to prove that? Because it seems like a pretty big issue. And if you can offer me any cases or any trial cases where that kind of evidence has been used to show that type of hypothetical, that this thing could be arousing to someone at the same time, dovetailing off of Representative Mullery's question that, you know, a foot is arousing to some people. In this instance, has that evidence been offered by the state at some point in Minnesota previously for the existing solicitation statute?
Mr. Gort.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I don't know the answer to that last part of your question with respect to the premise that this would create a situation where a prosecutor would be presented with the question of where does sexting end and child pornography begin. That's a question that we already are dealing with. It's a question that we're dealing with already with the existing statute. It's a question that we're tending to use our discretion to not prosecute. But that issue is already there without regard to this amendment. The question of is this sexual conduct, is this intercourse, is this masturbation, is this physical contact with apparent sexual gratification, that's already there. That's a question we are already dealing with. The idea of drafting some special sexting legislation is a good one. It will help us deal with that. But that's an issue that exists without regard to this amendment. What this amendment does is narrow the ability for people like Mr. Johnson to escape punishment for having child pornography in their possession.
Okay. Well, just by way of comment, then, last
Representative Lesh.
Sure. And I understand that. I understand you're trying to narrow the question and not step in anyone else's fight in order to pass this bill. But you are asking the committee to make a decision partially about that ongoing argument of where does child pornography begin and sexting end by taking a stand on this bill right now, even though, well, regardless, we are wading into that, and that's why I asked the question.
Representative Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh covered my question.
Great. Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think Mr. Volkman would like to maybe add a little context. It would be helpful.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name
please come up to the microphone, though, so we can actually hear you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Officer Travis Volkman of the Goodview Police Department. I am also an affiliate member of the Minnesota Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. I'd like to point out that up until December, when this case was overturned, we were acting in the manner of which this bill would require us to act if it were passed as it is with the Senate file here. So you talk about the upcoming or the rise of the sexting cases that could possibly be opened up if we pass this bill as the way it is right now, and we'd be looking at exactly how we were operating prior to December. We didn't see a lot of those cases being brought forward in Minnesota. Me being on the Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force, I'm not aware of any cases where we were prosecuting specifically for your typical sexting cases that we get. In our jurisdiction in Goodview, we come across these cases quite often where mom will find the cell phone of her daughters and there's some images on there that are questionable in nature. We don't prosecute those. Usually we look at those as an educational opportunity of what we can do to divert that that the way that person is acting and kind of give them the knowledge that of what can actually happen with those pictures. You know, these people break up down the road and now what's going to happen with these pictures. And so we try to really educate them on the permanence of those photos rather than prosecuting. So if we pass this bill, or if you pass this bill the way it is right now, it's really just reverting us back to how we were operating prior to December, which again, we weren't seeing a lot of these sexting cases being prosecuted anywhere. Now you have the other language there regarding the sexting. We're not saying we're against that other language, but there needs to be more research done for that. We find a few problems with the way the wording is with that right now, and we just like that to be brought up in the future and really separate these issues. The way we have the Senate version of the bill right now, and then those sexting issues can be brought up after some more research is done.
Representative Skowski, the challenge is, I think, that if this bill comes up, the issues are not going to be separate on the House floor. As most of you all know, that we see amendments all the time dealing with issues, and we need to have the public policy vetted in committee sometimes. And so, Representative Skowski, I'm going to ask if you'll continue to work with me on this and let me lay it over now and see if in the next month we can't figure out how to deal with this issue. What do you think about that, Representative Skowski?
Sounds very good, Madam Chair. Appreciate
it. Right. Questions from members. Representative Lash.
If I could, thank you. The officer, I forgot your name.
Officer Volk.
Officer Volk. I'd ask the same question of you because I am curious about that, about this. I don't doubt that these kinds of cases have been prosecuted under the existing solicitation statute. So I'm curious if you are aware of what kind of evidence, expert testimony evidence, has been used to suggest certain types of pornography can be arousing to any individual. Because I have no doubt the state has had to prove this at some point in time somewhere, because I'm sure it's been challenged. Are you familiar with that type of evidence, and have you worked with it in the past?
Go ahead.
And if I can clarify, I would gather that it's some type of social psychology data or studies, ongoing studies with respect to this.
Is it Officer Volkman?
That is correct. Madam Chair, Representative Walsh. You know, I don't do the prosecution, so I would refer those questions to Mr. Gort. In our case, we don't bring any of those sexting cases. We have not prosecuted in our jurisdiction any of the sexting cases to this point. Again, like I said, we make it more of an educational opportunity to meet with the parents and the victims and or suspects in this case and really hammer out what's really going on there.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Lesh, I believe 15 states have currently passed a statute on sexting. And I believe that one of the challenge becomes when one student sends an image to another, that's one thing. But when that other student then forwards that on to five or six of their friends or posts it on the internet or really publishes that work, I think folks really need to have an understanding of where we believe that line should be drawn in Minnesota. So, Representative Skowski.
Madam Chair, thank you. I would just offer that another option might be for us, and I don't know what the will of the committee is, but if the committee is willing to pass the bill out, we could offer to folks on the floor, if they, you know, make an amendment for sexting, to ask them to withhold the amendment. We're working on it, and we'll be bringing this forward in the very near future. I see the grin on your face, and that doesn't seem to seem to jive, Madam Chair.
Representative Drzewski, one of the challenges that we have is that any time a bill has the word sex in it in any way, shape, or form, it is always prone to all sorts of amendments on the House floor. You're back here because we felt, or the members of the Finance Committee felt, that this issue needed to be vetted in a more full way. Some might say got thrown under the bus or given a little shove under the bus about our committee not properly vetting this issue. I'm not going to have that happen again on this issue. So, Representative Drzewski, I commit to you that I will continue to work on this. We've got 30 days between now and the end of session. This bill would have to go to rules anyways, and so there's no rush. I commit to you that I will continue to work on it and see if we can't figure this out.
Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Paymar.
As the person who apparently threw you under the bus, let me just...
He's a bus driver.
Let me just say, if you're going to do it, I think Representative Jackson, you know, brought up the an important issue for this committee is, if we're going to deal with it, let's bring in the people who know something about it and tell us what's going on out there. I mean, not that you folks don't know about it, you see it all the time, but I mean, I think we need a broader discussion. If you really are serious about... Not that you're not serious about it. If we're dealing with the sexting issue on top of this issue, then I think we need to bring in more people who really have the research and the data on what's going on out there before we can, you know, draft an appropriate statute. I wouldn't feel comfortable going forward with it at this point.
Madam Chair.
Who? Oh, Representative Cole. Cole.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm a little confused, which happens often, but... I mean, I'm hearing an interest from Representative Drzewski to not deal with the sexting issue at this point in time. And I'm kind of hearing the same thing from others, I think, or maybe I'm not understanding what I'm hearing, but I guess I'm not sure, Madam Chair, I had thought this was going to be our last committee hearing. I'm not sure what the harm is of moving this out without recommendation or however we want to do it so that at least the bill doesn't die for this session. And if you and Representative Drzewski and others, Representative Jackson, Representative Paymar, are able to come to some agreement where this bill moves on its own with no amendments or what, I mean, we do those things around here all the time. If we lay this over now, it's dead. Unless this committee is going to, you know, meet again, we can move this out of here now without recommendation. It goes and sits on the general register until the Rules Committee pulls it off. Nothing happens until the Rules Committee acts anyway. And so, as the prosecutor explained, this doesn't change anything about the current state. I mean, this doesn't change how a prosecutor deals with or doesn't deal with a sexting issue. This language doesn't do that. And so if we're going to have a discussion about sexting, I didn't even know that term existed until a week ago. If we're going to have that conversation, then we should have it, but I don't see why we want to prevent child pornographers who are currently able to take advantage of a loophole from being prosecuted. That's what I'm just.
Madam Chair.
Representative Paymar.
Can I just say, I mean, with all due respect, and to Mr. Gort, I think, you know, Representative Lesch was talking about the solicitation statute. We're talking about the child pornography statute, and what your bill does is greatly expands the child pornography statute. Despite what Mr. Gord is saying, I mean, and it does, it or intended by a person who commits an act prohibited by this section or section 617247 to arouse the sexual desire of any person is expanding the child pornography statute in a way that could put out that whole net to people engaged in sexting. Yep. That's what it does. So it's not just a I don't think it's quite as simple as you're saying, Representative Coles, that we move it ahead. And I think it needs a broader discussion. I fully support what Representative Drzewski is attempting to do. But we would be expanding the child pornography statute.
Representative Jackson is on the list.
The very problem that brought us here, which is a court strictly construing language, is the reason that I'm not comfortable sending this on. Because while it may be your practice right now, that is subject to change, and we're creating language with unintended consequences. And judges can and might strictly construe this just as they, as that judge let that guy go because something didn't fit the definition. Now a whole lot more does. And it's for that very reason that judges look at the bald language. And how many times, just this year, we get a court case where, well, you read it and it says this, and we have to come back, and I don't want to have to do that. So I want to wait, and I want to get it right.
And Representative Coles, the reason why I feel just fine about letting it sit here is because we already passed this out once, and it went to finance. And it was through confusion and people not knowing what the language did or didn't do, which got it sent back here. And so I really don't want to have a repeat of an hour debate in a finance committee about what this does or doesn't do. That is for this committee to do. And we already had our last committee hearing, but out of respect for Representative Drazkowski and Representative Erdahl, who I thought we were going to see these amendments on the House floor, I thought it was a better place to vet them all in the policy committee. So, Representative Drazkowski, I think the folks who deal with these issues need to be talking about it. We are seeing cases, maybe not of a child yet, being prosecuted for it. We are seeing teachers. I think there was a teacher who had some sexual material of her students on a cell phone that students had sent to her. I mean, sexting is becoming part of what's going on, and we do need to address the issue. So, Representative Drazkowski, I hope you know that I will continue to work with you on this and see if we can't come up with something. I know you don't want to address the issue, but I think that from what I heard about what happened in finance, I think there are a lot of people that want to address that issue, and I think we'll see it on the House floor, and this, I think, is the better place to address it.
Well, I look forward to working with you, Madam Chair. Very willing to do so.
All right. The chair will lay over Senate File 2945. Thank you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you.
The last item on the agenda is Representative Erdahl. Representative Erdahl, I believe that there are amendments to this. So somebody actually has to move the bill. Did you ask someone ahead of time to move your bill, Representative Erdahl? No?
Representative Shemansky, Madam Speaker.
Representative Shemansky.
I move the
House
consideration file. Of House File 3637.
All right. Representative Shemansky moves that House File 3637 be recommended to pass and be sent to the Rules Committee. Representative Erdahl.
You have the, Madam Chair, the amendment DE2.
All right. And Representative Shemansky moves the DE2 amendment. DE1 amendment, Representative.
DE1?
Yep, DE1.
Did I see
Do you need a copy of it? You know, Representative Erdahl, while you're presenting your bill, and given it's a social occasion, do you mind if we hand out the cookies now?
No, that'd be fine. I'm missing my cookies and egg.
Okay. So we'll put out the cookies now. So Representative Drazkowski, make sure you take a cookie before you leave. Okay.
I don't have it.
Erica, do you have the amendment?
Yeah. Representative Erdahl, is the DE1 amendment the amendment that you want moved by Representative Shemansky?
Let's see. This is what everyone has.
Oh, yeah. Representative Erdahl, the reason why we're having you do the DE1 amendment first and then the A1 amendment second is because those actually made the 24-hour rule, and the other one where it just incorporates it both really didn't, and I didn't really want to make the objection. So first we're going to move the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Next is the A1 amendment.
Now I get it.
This will get the bill in the shape the author would like it. Representative Kelly will move the A1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Erdahl.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Now we'll move from sex to booze.
This bill increases penalties for knowingly providing alcoholic beverages that result in intoxication. The intent is not to direct this at bars or hotels. There are already laws in place there. We have a growing problem. 30% of our 12 to 20-year-olds surveyed by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services reported alcohol consumption in March in Minnesota. In 2008, there were 16 fatalities by underage impaired drivers, 530 DWIs, 6,359 arrests for liquor law violations. In 2007, 32 deaths, 1,800 non-fatal traffic injuries. I could go on and on with statistics, but I'm trying to establish that, yes, indeed, there is a problem. I've talked to Meeker County law enforcement, various other law enforcement people, including our state patrol folks that are here today. Now, the point is that we do have laws establishing penalties for underage drinking. But with the advent of the problem continuing to increase, they don't seem to be having the desired effect. And so I believe that we need more deterrent. And that's why this bill moves the penalty from misdemeanor to gross misdemeanor. I'd like to read from a nonprofit group called the Century Council that is made up of distillers and other groups. The Century Council believes that a combination of effective penalties and comprehensive education coupled with public education efforts about the crucial role of parents will enhance each community's efforts to reduce underage drinking. Working to restrict access to alcohol by those under the legal purchase age is everyone's goal. And so, you know, certainly this is just a part of it. You know, there's education, schools should be involved, parents should be involved, but my point here is that if we're going to try to stem a growing problem, that we should increase the penalty from misdemeanor to gross misdemeanor.
Questions from members. Representative Bigham.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Erdahl. I genuinely support this, and we're voting this out, right?
Well, we'll see.
Okay, well, I hope we do. I think it's a good, I just think we laid some bills over today. I don't. My question is, a lot of cities have adopted these ordinances on a local level. Have you talked to the League of Minnesota Cities? Have you talked to townships? Have you talked to the other stakeholders to see if this is not more appropriate on a local level to be adopted for local control?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Bigham. No, I have not talked to the League of the Minnesota Cities. I'm aware. In fact, I just talked to the officer who was up here a few moments ago about Winona, which has their local
it's a good town.
Ordinances, yes. But the fact is that even if we have that, and I don't discourage local ordinances, but it then becomes a patchwork. And I think that there should be a standard across the state. And again, essentially, this does not, I've used in this amendment, in this bill, existing statute language. The only change is that it goes from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor.
Representative Coles or Lesh, I didn't see who raised their hand first. Representative Coles. Representative Lesh.
He defers to Asian wisdom, I think he's a year younger than me, so.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand a word that you said.
There's the cookies, so good, Madam Chair.
Great.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, can you remind me, I think this original misdemeanor social host legislation occurred, and maybe someone on the committee can remind me, when the county attorney in Ramsey, Susan Gertner, had a situation where there was a party out in Maplewood a guy had for his teenage daughter, and someone died or something, and he couldn't be prosecuted. Can you recall, I think it was 8-10 years ago, or maybe more than that, or maybe someone else in the committee can remind me about the details of that?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, I don't know that historical background of it. In my particular case, my interest stems from the death of Amanda Jacks, who was a student at Mankato State a couple of years ago, you may recall, died of alcohol poisoning. That was through a bar, mainly, but her father and her stepmother live in my district and brought these concerns to me, and this is what I said that I would do.
Okay. Representative Coles?
A couple questions. Representative Erdahl, is there a fiscal note on this, or has there been a fiscal note? I'm not sure if just changing the penalty from misdemeanor to a gross would result in a fiscal note, but do we have one yet?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, no.
Representative Coles.
And Representative Erdahl, if I understand your testimony correctly, you're indicating that this is already illegal. We're just enhancing the penalty from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. Do we have any, can you provide the committee with any evidence that, you know, enhancing this penalty is going to change behavior and result in fewer situations where we have these types of situations? I don't have a big problem with enhancing penalties in most circumstances. I think we're a little too lenient here in Minnesota, but you know, I want it to have an impact, and so is this going to change behavior?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, that's the standard, I think, by which our, society and our legal system, does operate under, that greater penalties are deterrent. I don't have statistics on this. I guess that before I bring this up again anywhere, I will investigate that further. But just, from my personal standpoint of being an educator, if the penalty was, write down I won't talk 100 times, whereas assigned detention, that it did act as a deterrent. And that's a small example, but, I think that our system is based upon levels of deterrent.
I have Mullery, Mason, then Kelly. Representative Mullery.
Well, thank you, Madam Chairman. And basically, first of all, I don't think the justification for this bill really gives us a very good reason to pass this. There will be certainly a local cost to this, whether or not there's a cost to the state. But it seems to me that, and maybe this is what you're trying to do, and I'll give two situations that don't apply to me but would apply to people I know. And let's say they have a parent place, family goes to some family gathering up north, and some people go out to the hunting shack or something and they're drinking out there, and the person who owns it knows that there was somebody 20 years old went out there. So they fit this. Suddenly, if some game warden or somebody else walks on the property and sees them, they can arrest it, and now they're guilty of a gross misdemeanor. Same with a number of places in my district and the district just south of mine. In the summer, they will have block-wide gatherings to try and get people together. With the initial thing was that the more people know each other, the better they are on preventing crime. So there's a lot of those go on, and there is actually beer is sometimes imbibed at these. So whoever's property, whichever house somebody happens to be 20 years old on, the person knows that there's people there drinking, they move around, suddenly they're guilty of a gross misdemeanor. I certainly am very opposed to what you're doing on those situations, and I don't see how they're exempted.
Representative Mason.
Just did you want to answer that, Representative Erdl?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Erdl.
First of all, Representative Mullery, it's already under current law.
Misdemeanor.
I mean, they're already breaking the law. This just changes the penalty. It has to be knowing and reckless, and they have to also reach the point of being intoxicated. I mean, they've got to be drunk.
Madam.
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, a very, very important point. You said knowingly and reckless. It does not. It says knowingly or reckless.
Right.
That's a huge point.
I stand corrected on my conjunction.
Representative Mason.
Okay, Madam Chair, Representative Erdl. Right now, are there enough figures to show that currently people are being aggressively prosecuted, and so that would be the nature of your bill, or just is it truly a matter of increasing the penalty, or is it a matter of getting people more actively being arrested, period, at this point?
Representative Erdl.
Madam Chair, Representative Mason, in my discussions with law enforcement, they simply say that it is a very big problem. I mean, they are trying to prosecute, but they feel that a greater deterrent would lessen the violations.
Representative Mason?
That's fine, thank you.
Representative Kelly?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Mullery just touched on this, and just requesting some help on a definition. I don't know if there's any attorneys on this committee, but just that difference, or between knowingly and recklessly, and I guess with that language, knowingly or recklessly, if someone could just help me out on the definitions of the two.
Mr. Deeble. Okay. Anyone want to answer that question? Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kelly, recklessly includes knowingly, so the standard is essentially a knowingly standard. Because if it's or disjunctive, then you simply prosecute under knowingly. I'm not going to add in recklessly into a jig.
Representative Paymar, then Representative Mullery, but Representative Mullery, is this to Representative Lesh's
yes.
statement?
I'm not
Representative Mullery.
Madam Chair, I'm not a prosecutor, but I think if it says knowingly and recklessly, it would mean that recklessly, it has to be recklessly. I think so.
That's what
it, this is. This says, or Representative Lesh, but the question was, if it says knowingly and recklessly, it would have to be reckless, I believe.
Representative Paymar.
Madam Chair, did Representative Erdl, did the felony provision get taken out?
Representative Erdl.
Madam Chair, Representative Paymar, yes.
Where? In which amendment?
This takes
DE1?
The
DE1,
DE1. Representative Paymar.
DE1s, they have
Members, I just want to thank Representative Erdl. Representative Erdl was going to offer this as an amendment on the House floor, and he came over to me and he showed me the amendment that he was going to offer, and I told him that if he wanted to have a hearing on it, I would give him a hearing on it, because I felt it was very important that we vet this issue and talk about the public policy of it. I'd like to see if there's anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against it, but I want you to know that this bill did not move in the Senate, and so Representative Erdl will still be looking for a place for a home for this on the House floor. And so when I was asked if we were moving it out or not, I don't know if it really matters, but I thought it was very important that we have the opportunity to have this discussion, knowing that Representative Erdl does intend to find homes for it on the House floor. So is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none,
Representative Erdl, and thank you, Madam Chair. This appears, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it appears from reading the language that if the provider of alcohol provides it to somebody who is under the age of 21, they're, for that for that fact, that issue, they're strictly liable. It doesn't matter if they know that they're under 21 or they believe they're 23. If they are in fact under 21, that's it. That part of the statute is met. There's no knowledge requirement with regard to the age of the person consuming the alcohol. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, again, the knowingly provision, I mean, the person would have to know that they are providing alcohol for someone who is under the age of 20.
Representative Erdahl, I think he's talking about under current law before
under
you get
law?
Into this. Under current law, if you provide alcohol to a minor, you're strictly liable for whatever happens.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm reading the language on line 1.6 and 1.7. 1.7, it says consumption of alcoholic beverages by a person under the age of 21. So if I have one of my kids' friends over, my kid's 22, and goes to school with the kid who's 20, brings him over. I thought the kid was 23. I give him a couple glasses of wine. He happens to take off and drive and gets pulled over for a DUI. Now I am under this bill, and I think that's probably your intent, or it might be your intent. Under this bill, I am liable for a gross misdemeanor as the social host. Is that correct?
Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Coles, once again, that doesn't change what it is now under current law, and the person would have to be intoxicated.
Representative Mullery.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Coles, I just want to point out, this doesn't just apply to providers. This applies to if you knew that your son was 22 and brought a friend home from college and they had it in the car out there and you happened to see that they had it, were drinking it or something like that. It's not just provider. This is really broad.
Thank you.
Further, Representative Erdahl.
Madam Chair, Representative Mullery, it's the law the way it is today. It just changes the penalty.
Madam Chair, I realize it's a lot. You've repeated that about 10 times so far. We realize that it's a huge jump from a misdemeanor to a one-year sentence possible.
Awesome. Further questions from members?
Madam Chair.
Representative Paymar.
At some point, and this isn't the place to do it, but I think that I've been around here long enough, and I've done it myself, where we've increased penalties from misdemeanor to gross misdemeanor. And I don't think we've done a very good job looking at the collateral consequences of what a gross misdemeanor means on your record, mm-hmm. as we have with the felony. And I certainly get what you're trying to do here and basically, support it. I worry about the unintended consequences of this also, just because I've heard stories of people being denied employment for a gross misdemeanor, mm-hmm. when I always thought it was felony convictions. So at some point, I hope your committee or maybe Lush's committee, one of our committees examines that.
Questions from members? Seeing none, Representative Erdahl, I think I'm just going to lay it over, given the fact that there is no Senate companion moving and knowing that your intention is to offer it on the House floor. I think that, thank you for being willing to let us hear the issue and thank you for working with some of the stakeholders to make some changes. With that, the bill's laid over.
Thank you very much.
I need a motion for the minutes. Representative Cornish is going to move the minutes. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, before you adjourn, Madam Chair, I wish Representative Anderson were here, but I just, I understand this is probably our last meeting. I want to thank you for your leadership of the committee. We deal with a lot of really tough issues in this committee. I think today is a great example of that. I think we've done it bipartisanly, very respectfully, and I think we've bipartisanly sought to accomplish our goal of trying to enhance public safety here in Minnesota. And so appreciate your leadership. I appreciate your inclusion of the minority in the discussion, our ability to bring bills forward in this committee, which doesn't happen in all committees, and I respect that. I appreciate that. And I know Representative Anderson does as well. He wishes he were here to make those comments, but I make those on his behalf.
Well, thank you, Representative Coles. I have to say that this has been an excellent committee, and I have really appreciated the bipartisan work that we've had. So thank you for all your hard work. Thanks. This meeting is adjourned.